Log Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
Alaikum salam, and as always, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, who came to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, in the name of His Exalted Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and their reminder in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I want to thank you, Sister Gidget, for inviting me on the show. I'm looking forward to getting some history, splitting some history, and having some fun.
Can you reintroduce yourself again? Because you were kind of breaking up. Okay, it's Brother Rasul, representing St. Louis, singing Motown the best way to possibly be sang. I'm promised not to sing in the key of Q.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay, and we have someone else with us for the first time ever, Brother James W. Muhammad out of St. Louis, Missouri. Come down front and center, soldier, introduce yourself.
What? Representing for hip hop, Dynasty Hip Hop, all throughout St. Louis and throughout the world, and representing Honorable Miss Louis Farrakhan, James W. Muhammad, representing. It's an honor to be here with you, Gidget, Sister Gidget, and your distinguished panel of guests. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, sir. You are so welcome. You are so welcome. And all the way from Chicago, Illinois, my beloved brother, Daniel Muhammad, who's always on Facebook posting some of the most beautiful pictures and most beautiful historic moments from Motown. Brother Daniel, come down front and center, soldier. Introduce yourself.
Assalamu alaikum. Brother Daniel Muhammad, I'm thankful for Sister Gidget for putting that suggestion out on Blog Talk Radio on the Motown sound. I'm going to put a little input on my side, also with my beloved brother Jamil. And Sister Gidget, thank you for getting some information from me also, Sister. Some later on.
Thank you, dear brother. Thank you. And last and certainly not least, our beloved brother, father of many of our wisdom, who is not only very comical, very educated, but he also sings. And he's going to bless us by singing us a little doo-wop or something. He's going to give us something. But we are more than honored to have our beloved brother, student minister Jamil Muhammad, from all over the nation. I know he's born in Cincinnati, but he's from all over the nation.
Yes,
brother,
right.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Jamil.
Wa alaikum salam to you, Sister Gidget, and to the family of brothers and all of our callers and guests. It's my honor to be here with you tonight, and as I speak to you tonight, I'm speaking to you from Washington, D.C., where I expect to be in the company of our brother Abdul Qadir Muhammad and the believers here at Mosque Number 4 on tomorrow. And I tell you, dear beloved brothers and sisters, it's a good time to get together and to think about the context and the history of the music that informed many of our youth. I think I'm maybe the senior member of this panel tonight. But Motown was the music of my youth. I didn't have to hear about it or watch the Temptations movie. I kind of lived the Temptations experience. So tonight will be a fine, fine opportunity for me to talk with you. I'm grateful that you've invited us to be together, Sister Gidget. So, like they used to say on the cartoons, no more rehearsing and cursing apart. We know every part by heart. So on with the show, this is it. Okay, so on with the show, this is it. Let's do it.
All right. Okay, well, we're talking about Motown, which was established by Berry Gordy, and we all know who Berry Gordy is. I think
he is
the founder, and is the founder of Motown, and some of the best music ever generated by our people in particularly. And I'm going to let some people who know a whole lot more about Berry Gordy and the beginning of Motown speak. I mean, I got my little historical parts in there too, but I'm going to start with Brother Jamil. Brother Jamil, tell us about Berry Gordy and how did he just make all this possible?
Well, I think Berry Gordy, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not consulting notes, and so, Sister, if you have notes, please feel free to interject and correct me if I make a miscue
of
any sort. But I believe that Berry Gordy was the son of Berry Gordy Sr., and called Pop Gordy.
That's right.
Who was the owner of a pharmacy in Detroit in the mid-20th century, the 30s, 40s, 50s. Actually, he was a compatriot and a contemporary of such important Detroiters as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Reverend C.L. Franklin and other colorful figures and important figures in black history who come out of Detroit at that period of time. Berry Gordy was one of a number of children of Pops Gordy and his beloved wife, who all had a various different levels of entrepreneurial aspirations. They wanted to own their own businesses. That was the lifestyle in which they had come up. That's what their dad did, and that's what they wanted to do. So I understand that Berry Gordy, after his fledgling career as a pugilist, did not work out well. And I can imagine him as a little boxer, you know, trying to make his money in the ring. Didn't work out well. Berry Gordy took a job on an assembly line. But his dreams of entrepreneurial success didn't die. He thought he would open a record shop, and so he did. And he began dealing with promotions, and his interest in music grew far beyond just selling records. He became interested in the writing and the production of music. So in 1958, he had a big hit with a Detroit artist.
Jackie Wilson.
Let me do this. Jackie Wilson. And the record was called Reek Petit. And he came out with Reek Petit. Big smash hit. And then, with some money from that record, the money from touring and promotion, and a loan from his father and others in his family, he opened this fledgling company, Motown Records. And there you have the story.
Okay. All right. So, some of the early artists of Motown were who? Brother Daniel?
Bear Strong. Mabel John. Then then he has Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Mary Wells and Marvelettes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so a lot of them, if I'm not mistaken, didn't a lot of them work there as well?
Well, Martha Reeves worked in the artist and repertoire department.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to her singing, she was part of that department, and also before they started Hitsville, Berry Gordy's father, Berry Gordy Sr., and David Ruff and others had helped build Hitsville with their bare hands.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And so what about the groups? Who were the first groups?
I'd say Smokey Robinson and the Miracles was the first group. And the Marvelettes also.
Okay. All right. So, anybody else have anything they want to contribute about the beginnings of Motown?
Yes. This is James W. Muhammad. It's definitely very enlightening talking to these very well-informed brothers of our history. And I just want to applaud them because it's just like what Student Minister Jamil said. They lived it. Just like how today, you know, we have a generation that's living in hip-hop, and they lived through hip-hop also, all praise due to Allah. But when I look into the history of Motown, and I look into the of art and culture, how art is synonymous with culture, how art is indicative and actually permeates into culture. And when I think about the history of the Nation of Islam and the history of Motown, you see that this was a great work that was almost hand-in-hand. Because Berry Gordy was born November 28th in 1929, just a month prior to 1930, when which is the year that Master Farah Muhammad came and found his now exalted Christ. And in 1929, he was born. And he was born in the city of Detroit, which is Mecca, which is the city that Master Farah Muhammad came to do his first work. But not only was he born in the city of Detroit, but his parents originally moved from Georgia, which is where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was born. See, there's a correlation in what was going on here, that this man will be building something that will resurrect our people and show how powerful media is in resurrecting our people. Not only was his parents from Georgia and came into Detroit, where Master Farah Muhammad came after leaving the state that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was born in, but he was the seventh of eight children,
mm-hmm.
which is his holy number. He was the seventh of eight children. And then, after being the seventh of eight children, his first label where he did, where he was working with the Miracles was called Mark X in 1957. Mark X? I mean, there's a lot of correlation that sounds like it's total NOI history and what he was doing. And then when he developed the label Motown, the emblem was a big M. And the M looks just like a big M standing for Muhammad, but it goes beyond that because most people call Muslim what's up, Mo. What's up, bro? Now, Detroit was originally Motown, if most people call Muslims Mo. And they call us, you know, that's their slang for us. What up, Mo? How you doing, Mo? But then the label that he developed is called Motown, in the same town that the birth of our beliefs and the birth of our aspirations and the same town that Master Farah Muhammad came to first, and he calls his label Motown, and then he developed groups like the Miracles. The Miracles. It was a miracle what he was doing. It stands right along with the miracle that Master Farah Muhammad came and the energy that he produced, but it wasn't enough to make a miracle because when Master Farah Muhammad came, he gave us supreme wisdom. Did he not produce a group called the Supremes?
That's
Did
right.
Did he not produce a group called the Supremes that taught us supreme wisdom when they said, stop in the name of love before you break my heart? Stop in the name of love meaning stop what? Stop the social degeneration? To stop the pain that we're causing to one another before you break my heart. And we in the Nation of Islam know that heart is synonymous with willpower, the will to do God's work. And it says, stop this foolishness in the name of love coming from the Supreme, speaking supreme wisdom through music and reaching our people and inspiring the best in our people to make them reach for the heights of heaven. So Barry Gordy, when you look at our history and look at his history, it is very relevant, and it's not a coincidence that he came in that city and that a lot of his history is compounded and built on top of our history also.
Now,
excuse
in my lifetime, because, you know, I'm kind of old, in my lifetime, I have never, ever heard that before, and that is just so amazing, Brother James. Thank you for sharing that. Brother
Sister
Daddy, Gidget, you have a comment?
Yes, I want to share this also with the panel, and I think Brother Jamil might be aware of this. On the Psychedelic Shack album that the Temptations did in '70s, they did a song called "Your Heaven and Hell on Earth." The producer, songwriter and producer at the time, the late Norman Whitfield, put that out there for the Temptations to sing, even though it was never played on the radio. When we say heaven and hell on earth, that came from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Heaven and hell is a state of mind, state of condition.
Yes, sir.
It was impossible, Sister Gidget and brothers, it was impossible to be in black America in that time and not to have been affected by the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We're not on a program dealing with religion tonight. We're dealing with music. But I will say that you will see later in the history of black music and perhaps on other editions of Young, Gifted, and Black, you'll hear about the full flower of the relationship between the Nation of Islam, its teaching, and black music come up not in Detroit, but later, 10 years later or so, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, with the rise of Philadelphia International Records under the leadership of Gamble and Huff, Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. And so you see that it's impossible to be involved in black America and not be touched by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Brother
Daniel
is exactly right. Heaven and hell, two conditions of life. And then the other one that comes to mind immediately, a song called by the Temptations, Message from a Black Man.
That's right.
Message
on the Puzzle People album.
On the Puzzle People album. And you hear the chorus, no matter how hard you try, you can't stop me now. You know, and so that whole process, you know, of speaking truth to power from the bully pulpit of music went far beyond just the love lyrics. And even if the lyrics were only talking about romantic love, they were providing cultural cues that were light years ahead of much of what we have today. And we'll come to that later on in the program, I'm sure.
Yes, right.
But when you hear Stop in the Name of Love and I hear a symphony,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if young girls today know what a symphony sounds like to compare that to the rush
right.
that enters their head when their beloved walks into the room. But when she says, I hear a symphony, a tender melody, a wonderful rhapsody, you know, you know, that kind of thing, that rhyme pattern, those references, that musical, beautiful, elemental powerful representation is something that made Motown what it was and shadowed what I said a few moments ago, the rise of Philadelphia International, which was a much more frontal and direct statement of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we'll come to that in just a little while.
Amazing, amazing. I am so blessed tonight to have you all to be so knowledgeable. I didn't even know that when I was gathering this particular group of men that I would be blessed with all this with this knowledge. And I think we already have a question. So since we only have one question on the line, I'm going to go ahead and open up the line for area code 720. Your mic is live. Do you have a question? Okay. All right. Thank you, sister, for listening. All right. So now, in your opinion, come on. Now, I know I'm going to give y'all some time to think about this. But in your opinion, I want to know two things. Best Motown group ever. Best Motown song ever. And I'm going to start with Brother Rasul.
Best Motown group ever, come on. Mighty, mighty Temptation.
Hands
down. And I'm not saying it because they're my favorite group. I'm saying it because they are the best.
Okay. And the best song, Brother Russell?
That, song, of course, is My Girl. My Girl.
Okay. All right. Brother Kareem, best group, best song.
Well, I have to agree with my brother. It would be the Mighty Mighty Temptations. And as far as best song, I mean, I love My Girl. However, as far as I'm concerned, that best song for me was Runaway Child Running Wild.
Oh, okay. All right. And Brother Jamil, best group, best song.
Wow. I think that it is almost a dead heat in terms of duration, commercial success, critical success, and really the place in the collective psyche of Black America. It's a dead heat between the Temptations and the group that used to be known as the Primettes. That would be the Supremes. Now, the reason why I say this is a dead heat is because in the mid-60s, before the Temptations really hit their stride, the Supremes were number one on the charts back to back to back to back to back and fueled Motown's rise into commercial prominence, which allowed them to flood the market with their other product and make a success there. But when you talk about group sounds, not Stevie Wonder, not Marvin Gaye, not Mary Wells, not the individual performers, but group sounds, ooh-wee, that's tough, because right there next to the Supremes and the Temptations is the Jackson 5. Remember, they were on Motown later in the process. So you have a lot of real good stuff. I'm going to say that the Temptations, I'm going to go with my brothers and say that the Temptations are still the number one group, but I'm going to say that my favorite Motown song is the height of that Holland Dozier, Holland crank machine, and it comes out, it's called You Keep Me Hanging On by the Supremes. You cannot argue with that driving Motown beat. It will slap you upside your head and make you jerk your neck at the stoplight, in the car, in front of people, on your way home from church, and on the way to a funeral. You will still be snapping your head up in that car. Set me free, why don't you, baby? Give me my life, why don't you, baby? See, that's what I'm gonna make you move.
Don't really know. That's
Brother Daniel.
Yes, ma'am.
Group, best song.
I'm going to say this. A group that I really respect that never had a change in the lineup during the Motown time, they've been around for 59 years, that's the Mighty Four Tops.
Yes, sir.
I say that?
Yes.
Because, number one, they've been together since 1954, but even though they had unfortunate deaths in the group with three members of the group, the original man, Abdul Duke Fakir, kept the kept the group going. But my favorite Four Tops song is Reach Out, I'll Be There, produced by Holland, Dozier, and Holland. Mm-hmm. And they, I have to give those three guys credit to put, gave the Four Tops that song. That was originally for the Isley Brothers. Mm-hmm. And the Isleys wasn't at the studio, so it was a big fight. So Barry called a meeting, and they had a vote. Stevie Wonder had a suggestion. The Four Tops, let them. They deserve that record.
Mm.
Why the, and Reach Out, I'll Be There. I always hear it every time. If you feel that you can't go on, because all of your hope is gone. And your life's filled with much confusion until happiness is just an illusion. I'm just hearing that from Coolie High, and I hear it every time I play it at home.
Wow, go ahead, bro.
Okay. Brother Kareem, that's good. Yep. That's all.
You said, you asked me already. Yes, you did.
Sure did.
Brother James, I'm sorry.
Well, you know what? The Temps and Tops, they always had a rivalry. And, you know, and Jamil, I mean.
It was a friendly rival, brother.
Yeah, I know it was a friendly rivalry. It wasn't beef like today, like these fools. I mean, like what's going on today. But I'd like to always compliment Brother Jamil because he always goes beyond the surface knowledge when he talked about the name prior to the Supremes, the Premessen, or you know. So I definitely want to compliment my brother on that. Always learning something from my brother. But my favorite group, I would have to say, would be the Temps also, and the favorite song would have to be I Can't Get Next to You. Because in this song, they're always breaking down the reality that the black man is God. Quintana, gray sky blue. I can build a castle on a single grain of sand. I can make a ship sail on dry land. But even with all the power that he possessed, if he wasn't right by that black woman, she's a god too. Can't get next
right.
to you, though. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, when you listen to these songs, you always they knew who they were. They knew the power who they were, and they knew the power and the majesty of the black woman that even with all the power that you possess, if you ain't totally right by her, you can't get next to her, meaning you still can't get next to God. You may have this power, yeah, this ability, but you're not completely fulfilled until that woman is with you.
Oh, that's power.
Come on.
Go
ahead.
Now, you know, Sister Gidget, I want to horse you back off of what Brother James said just now because it makes, this is Brother Jamil, by the way, but I wanted to say, when Brother makes this point, there's also another connecting force. Like we talked a little while ago about the connection between the social activism that started in Motown and reached its full flower and full bloom in Philadelphia. Now, you look at the transferability of the idiom of soul music from Detroit and
great,
the whole Dennis Edwards-led vocals on I Can't Get Next to You. But then let's turn around and think about the other version of Can't Get Next to You that lit a flame under America. Remember, Al Green did that song, too, out of Memphis.
Sure did.
Al Green slowed it down a little bit and put that Memphis stank on it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So there's a connection between the Detroit, the Memphis, the Chicago, the New Orleans, even the smaller recording cities where there was activity, like Washington.
And Philadelphia.
No, we talked about Philadelphia just a moment ago. And even in America's funkiest city. Y'all know what America's funkiest city is?
Chocolate City, right?
Oh, man. America's funkiest city, pound for pound in music, is Dayton, Ohio. And
yes, sir.
Dayton, Ohio, and Brother Danny, you know what I'm talking about. Out of Dayton, you get the Ohio Players.
That's right.
You get
one day, I won't have to listen to
your
guys. Yes. I'll be able to make my own mind. Y'all have to excuse me. That's me and my daughter's voice, so, you know, I got it like that.
Yeah, you want to be free. You want to be free.
Gidget. Sister Gidget.
Yes, sir.
I want to add also, you know, what the brothers to realize about Norman Whitfield. See, when Norman Whitfield had a lock on the Temptations in the mid-60s, prior to Dennis Edwards, when Dennis Edwards came to the group in 68, 69, he was mainly influenced to a degree by Sly and the Family Stone to start Cloud Nine.
Uh-huh. Well, that's my cousin, Sylvester Stewart. That is my cousin. Yes, I know. I heard.
And Norman Whitfield was the type of songwriter. He drives the lyrics. You know, and besides the Temptations that he worked with, when he did other songs, you know, with Edwin Starr and Gladys Knight and the Pips, Undisputed Truth.
Okay.
Yes, sir. The hit record that the Undisputed Truth had. So it's very important for us to know that one, too.
Smiling Faces Sometimes.
That's no lie. And that one has another Muslim connection in that the guitarist and musical director on that song is a brother that we know today as Brother Wali Ali. He's from the Imam's community, Imam Warabi Muhammad's community, but he's a longtime musician in the Nation of Islam, and we were present for the whole process. And so Brother Daniel's exactly right. Norman Whitfield was hearing Islam in his ear in the studio every day from Brother Wally, and that's exactly what happened.
Beautiful.
All praises due to Allah. It's just so amazing what you will learn. But what I'm also learning is how conscious the music was back then. And we have really, really lost that grip. Okay, listen, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a song. But this song here has been covered by more artists on Motown, on the Motown record label, than any other song. But I'm going to play the version by the group that recorded it first. And I don't have to tell you the name of the song. You'll know it when you hear it. Here we go.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yes, ma'am. But I'm kind of yesterday. So I heard you say, how much longer would you be mine? Just about the time I do. Ooh.
said anyway, that was the imprint of soul, Miss Gladys Knight and her clips. Now, can anybody tell me what was going on with Gladys Knight and the clips at Motown?
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
You know, I'm gonna share you all with something with that song "Heard It Through the Grapevine." Norman Whitfield and Barry Strong first had Marvin Gaye to record it, and Berry Gordy was furious. He said he didn't like the sound Marvin Gaye's version. He said, "Give it to Gladys Knight," and Gladys Knight and the Pips just came to Motown late '66, early '67. So when Gladys sang, recorded, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, and it got airplay and went to number one in
1967. All right. Okay. All right.
And also to add to that, the Temptations, when they did it, it was on their Cloud 9 album after Cloud 9 that came out in 1969.
Oh, well, I never liked their version. I mean, you know, the Temps is good and everything, but that song right there, in my opinion, that's Gladys. That's Gladys and her Pips. I'm sorry. That's my favorite version.
I'm gonna have to vote for the baddest Gladys and the Hip Pips myself. And the reason why, sisters and brothers, is that Gladys Knight and the Pips represented for me one of the great triumphs of Berry Gordy as a businessman. Berry Gordy had, by the mid-60s, when Gladys got there, as Brother correctly pointed out, in 66 or 67, Motown had become a corporate assembly line, cranking out hits just like the Ford Motor Company was cranking out Mustangs. They just made hits, one after another. But there were some artists who did not fit the commercial assembly line mold of Motown. They ended up not on Motown's signature label, the blue label with the map at the top, not on Tambla, the label that had
the Smokey Robinson globe in the middle.
Right, that would be the yellow label with the brown at the top that had Smokey Robinson and it had
Stevie
Wonder and the Marvelettes. No.
Brenda
they
Holloway.
They ended up on Gordy, which was the vanity label for the Temptations and Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. But these acts that didn't fit the Motown corporate structure, think about it. They ended up on the label that you all remember, Soul Records.
Soul, yes, sir.
That's where Gladys Knight was. That's where
Junior
Walker and
All-Stars.
That's where Shorty Long was.
Yes, sir.
That's where Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers were.
Vancouver.
And that's right. Those were these groups that had already established themselves in show business and had a sound and an identity all their own. But Berry Gordy wasn't going to miss out on the money he could count selling records under the Motown umbrella. So he put them on Soul, and they made records. And Gladys Knight and the Pips gave you a version of that sound right there, raw and gritty and still sophisticated and sultry and sexy.
That ain't nothing but the truth.
Straight out of Atlanta, Georgia, y'all. That's from Atlanta, Georgia. And they put it down.
ATL, definitely.
So, yeah, Berry Gordy was a genius. He took people and put them where they belonged and continued clocking dollars, making plenty.
That's right. Can I add something to that after Brother Jamil said?
Right now, today, is still one of the best performers in our music history that is still from, because she has spanned all these generations and all these genres of music. People will still flock out in great numbers to see Gladys Knight.
Absolutely. And she still produces.
Yes,
excuse me, Sister Gidget.
Uh-huh.
Sister Gidget.
Yes.
It's Brother Daniel. Assalamu alaikum. Yes, I want to add something also, you know, with Brother Jamil. I'm going to give you all two inputs. When the Four Tops came to Motown in 63, when they was when the label started, they tried to get the Four Tops to come to Motown, and the Four Tops declined. The Four Tops had a hard time in 63 to look for a record label. But when Mickey Stevenson told them, come on to Motown, Berry Gordy at the time had them singing jazz, which they had a little short label called Mo Jazz. Mm-hmm. And that, they did a few songs out of that label in 63. Then in 64, that's when they came out with Baby, I Need Your Lovin', when they went on to Motown. And the Four Tops group name, when they started off in 1954, was the Four Ames.
All right. Who knew? And I think I heard Brother James. Did you want to make a comment, sir?
Yes, man, that was me. When you were talking about the timeless and eloquent voice of Gladys Knight, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, just like I remember back in the day when I was like 7 or 8, you know, songs like Love Overboard. I mean, even from the James Bond License to Kill soundtrack, I mean, Gladys Knight's voice is a timeless voice. It's a classic voice, and it has not changed one iota that I can detect. I mean, it still has the same integrity, the same volume. And it's not like those voices of those artists that be smoking, like Frank Sinatra, where they start smoking and they just talking now. I mean, she still has that same octave range and that power. You know, she's a god of what she does.
Let's be honest about it, brothers. Next to Sister LaToya, Gladys Knight, the finest woman ever been born. Okay, let's just tell it the way it is. Okay. next to LaToya.
Jamil, you need to stop, brother.
Gladys has a restaurant in Atlanta.
In Atlanta, yeah.
I don't want to call no names, but there was one of our brothers, one of the laborers and officials who used to labor in that city of Atlanta. And the poor brother was in the restaurant, and Gladys come in the restaurant. And her son, Shanga, who's a dear friend of this brother, brought Gladys over to his table, you know. And I didn't say that. But the brother couldn't say that. The brother just sat there. I'm glad. He couldn't say that. Because Gladys is the baddest of all time. She is truly the empress of soul and a really, genuinely beautiful, radiant soul. She's a brilliant black woman. You know, great for
Absolutely, and I want to throw out my bragging rights because I had the opportunity to meet Sister Gladys in Houston and hum a few tunes with her and her song that has been revived from a Tyler Perry movie, Need to Be. I had the opportunity to sing that with her. And so, Brother Jamil, you are absolutely right. She is a down-to-earth sister, beautiful soul. You know, genuineness just radiates from her. Love her so much. So she is a wonderful, wonderful person. And even though
the second finest woman ever born.
The
second finest woman ever born.
Okay, anyway, before you get in trouble with Sister LaToya, anyway. Does anybody else have anything they want to offer about Gladys Knight and the Pips? Brother Rasul, Brother Kareem? Y'all been quiet. I know y'all know something about Gladys Knight and the Pips. Come on now.
So one of my favorite songs, by Gladys Knight, is a song saying during the war. I'm not sure, but I'm sure Brother Jamil could correct me on it.
What is this song about?
I don't want to do wrong. That's one of my favorite songs.
It's been so long.
Right.
You couldn't help yourself. Don't you mess up that song, baby. That's my song. No. Don't want to do wrong. Oh, don't.
All right, now.
That is my okay. But you know what? That is one of the baddest Dear John songs I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was done very well. Done very well.
Right.
You're going to dump somebody.
That's my mother's favorite song.
I think we also need to understand, though, from the perspective family about Motown, Gladys Knight was already an adult act when she came
right.
to Motown. The songs that she sang, I Don't Want to Do Wrong, But It's Been So Long, If I Were Your Woman and You Were My Man, neither one of us wants to be the first to say goodbye. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. So these are adult songs about adult situations. where Motown has made his bread and butter off of teeny bopper songs.
Absolutely.
Please, Mr. Postman, is there a letter in your bag for me from the Marvelettes? And the and
right.
Martha and the Vandellas, Jimmy Mac. Jimmy? Oh, Jimmy Mac.
Jimmy Mac. Are you coming back?
Yes, sir. They're singing songs about younger people, about high school situations, you know, stopping the
right.
name of love and all the very different things that could have been applied to older people, but they were instantly recognizable by young people.
For the younger man.
Gordy was another reason why he was a business pioneer, was because Mr. Gordy actually marketed his records for the sound that his target audience would hear them in. And he produced them. And I'm sure Brother Daniel could tell you this about Studio 8 in Hitsville there on West Grand Boulevard in Detroit. They
right.
used to record in a very trebly sound with high drum pitches from Benny Benjamin and the Funk Brothers there with James.
That's
Daniel.
Right.
And they would record in a certain way that sounded good on car radios and on transistor radios over the AM dial.
Right.
Very wise marketing. They knew that their records were not being sold on FM, which was a small dot in the radio universe at that point. And they also knew that people were not listening on high audiophile quality equipment. That's why Motown was a singles company, not an albums company, not until the 70s. So you had Berry Gordy with a masterstroke of understanding the record business, how it worked, and how to work it. So I salute him for that as well.
Absolutely.
Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, sir, Brother James. I mean, Brother Daniel.
You know, I want to add to something on what Berry did as far as having the acts in the mid-60s at the Copacabana. See, one thing at the time, majority of the Motown acts were in their mid or early 20s or in their teenage, you know, in their teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
When the mid-60s came, Berry Gordy, now the Four Tops knew how to perform in those type of supper clubs because they were more, they were older than the, some of these male, some of the Motown acts. They were in their late 20s, early 30s. But when Berry sent the group to the Copacabanas and what have you, you know, and they had them singing standards to receive the white audience and the older audience, like in a way I would call it crossover. And what people don't understand, Berry had a genius of not letting these acts to rest on their laurels.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to give y'all one more song, and I don't have to identify this person, but I'll tell you what, he is a musical genius, and that's all you can say about
yes,
this man.
Ma'am.
I'm gonna swing the song, yeah, just a one. So goodbye.
Fingertips, Stevie Wonder.
Yep, known as
No, that wasn't Stevie Wonder. That was Little Stevie Wonder.
Little Stevie Wonder.
Okay, that is correct. That is correct. Little Stevie Wonder.
You know, I think it's important also that we notice a couple of the other figures that made Motown great who were not headline artists, but whose contributions were essential.
Yes,
now,
sir.
You see often on Stevie Wonder's records a co-writer's credit for a brother named Clarence Paul.
Right.
And Clarence Paul was the band leader that you hear on the extended version of Fingertips Part 2 when Stevie Wonder gets back to the stage. Because remember, he's telling the audience, just one more time, when I come back, just one more time, when I'm getting back, goodbye. Then he comes back on, and you hear frantically, as Stevie Wonder begins his riffing, you hear Clarence Paul in the background asking the band members, what key? What key?
Yes, sir. Yes,
He's
sir.
Asking, what key are we going to play this in? And Stevie just takes them in, and they find the right key and get in the groove, and right there on the spot.
Right.
Just like Ray Charles did for Atlantic Records with What I Say. They made a hit with a live record on the spot and changed the face of American popular music. People like Clarence Paul. My brother talked about Mickey Stevenson. Mickey Stevenson brought people to Motown, but Mickey Stevenson was essential in building the career of the Miracles, both when Smokey and Claudette were there and after Claudette left, and as Smokey came to the front, as the group became Smokey Robinson, the Miracles, Mickey Stevenson was there for the whole time. And it was Mickey who created the song Mickey's Monkey.
Right.
You remember that song?
Holland Dozier in Holland.
Mickey's Monkey. Right.
Brother Jamil.
They're talking about that. Yes.
You know, also, you got to realize, Smokey said this, Lamont Dozier played that key, Nam Da Nam Da La, and that caught Smokey's ear. Smokey said, hey, put that key together, and that's what helped Mickey's Monkey
out. That's right. There's so many stories at Motown. Do you remember the song Marvin Gaye had, Pride and Joy?
Yes, sir. That was
his wife. It had no opening coda.
Right.
So the great Motown, the late great Motown pianist, one of the Funk Brothers, Joe Hunter, put together the little basic piano, boo 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 boo, boo 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 boo, ba ba, and then you hear Marvin Gaye, you are my pride and joy, and I just love you, pretty baby,
your baby boy,
love you, you pick me up when I'm down, and when we go out pretty, mama, you shake up the whole town, and that's why you are my pride and joy. See, all that started out with just them working out things in the studio. So Brother Daniel is right against that whole thing, and what Brother James is talking about, the contextual understanding of what was happening in Black America. As followers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we cannot afford to just enjoy music for music's sake.
Ahead,
we have to understand what it is that we are doing and how it affects the future of our people. Because for all the enjoyment that music gives, if music is worthless and throws us back and push us back further from where our goal is for freedom, justice, and equality, then
that's
music is worthless to us. But
come
if
on.
Music come begins
on.
To assume the place in our minds where it begins to to take us higher, that's what music in Motown served to do. I'm going to leave you by saying this. These rappers say, Brother James, you know, I'm keeping it real. I'm just rapping about what I see. Things is hard in my hood, so I keep it real. I say what is real. Okay, well, you could say that. But, you know, things in 1896 were very, very difficult, too.
Absolutely.
Things were hard. There was Plessy v. Ferguson, and there was lynching, and there was Jim Crow, and there was
the
rollback of the civil rights of the Reconstruction. Black people were being herded like cattle to the ghettos of the North, or oppressed openly in the plantations of the South.
And when James Weldon Johnson saw that, he could have kept it real and talked about what was happening in a negative way.
Yeah, bro.
But instead, he used his pen and wrote, "Lift every voice,
and sing,
till earth and heaven ring." He wrote about lifting the spirit. He kept it real, but he kept it real and focused on a better tomorrow. That is the challenge for today's musicians. And in the 60s, whether you like it or not, the Motown artists and the Motown management responded to that in their own unique way, which was time appropriate, age appropriate, and condition appropriate for that time. So, Sister Gigi, you hit the ball right out of the park. You hit this thing out of here. You ain't on the steroids like Mark McGuire from St. Louis. No. You hit this bad boy out of the park like Willie Mays.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Or Gary Matthews.
There you go. Oh, yeah, Matthews. Okay, all right.
From Chicago Cubs.
All right. Okay, now listen, now, back then as well, because we know, we listen, you know, some of us listen to our modern-day R&B artists. I'm not talking about our hip-hop artists, but the ones that call themselves R&B artists. And I'm referring to, let's say, Joe, let's say, R. Kelly, Anthony Hamilton, you know, whosoever. But a lot of the music is really, when they referring to love, a lot of it, not all of it, it's more sexual.
Right.
And it's not really about love and admiration, and it's not even respectable because it takes you straight to the bedroom. You know,
that's
you saw her and you fell in love with her brown eyes and her soft hair or anything like that, or if she made your heart flutter. We don't know nothing about all that, but we know what you did in the bedroom. And so music has really, really kind of, you know, just made this 360 when it comes to talking about love. But I'm going to give you one by a brother who appeared to maybe have messed up, but he could still express his love. And I don't have to introduce this man or this group either. You all know who it is when you hear the song. So here we go.
Okay. I did you wrong. My heart went out the drain.
But in the game,
I lost you. What a price to pay. Thank you.
Bill and those miracles out of Detroit City on your radio tonight. 10 o'clock straight up on the East Coast, 9 in the Central Time Zone. If we continue to give it up while I'm young, gifted, and black. Now,
yes,
let me tell you something. I had the pleasure, and you may have seen it a few years ago.
In the final call.
To interview, and Daniel, you know where I was going, to interview Brother Smokey Robinson for a story in our paper. And I have to tell you, I'm not a frequent contributor to the final call, but I've written on the subject of music and culture for the paper a few times in the past. And I have to tell you, the nicest guy I ever interviewed.
Yes, sir.
Just a good guy who loves black people and loves Islam. Loves Minister Farrakhan and really was a great eye and taught about how we were able to, you know, survive as a people in terms of our history. Beautiful brother. And just a real good cat. A real down cat. And I'm very glad to see his career at the level of honor and respect that no one can dispute. And to hear Bob Dylan describe him as the greatest poet of the 20th
century. That's right.
To hear others describe him as the lyricism that he brought and the wit that he brought. You won't believe it. Go get a song by Smokey Robinson called The Love I Saw in You.
It's just a mirage.
Man, he put a rhyme pattern together on that song. I can't.
Yes, sir.
Trust me, go get it. The Love I Saw in You was just a mirage. You will be glad you did, and you can thank me later. This is a good show. Man, I'm having fun.
You're not alone, Brother Jamil.
I want to hear more from Brother Rasul and Brother James and Brother Kareem, because y'all just sitting up there being quiet.
Yep.
And I know
see, what you don't know is our brother right there, Brother Jamil. See, in Islam, we are taught that when someone has a wisdom and they have, you know, some information, you know, I'm going to submit this to the information because that makes me better. But at the same time, you know, my brother is saying things so well, and he's expressing it so well, why would I interrupt what he's saying? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I fall in line and listen to the one that has the information. There's a lot of background. And we can learn from that information, sister. So don't you implore a rebellion against this brother. You understand? Don't you start trying to against the man that's coming with a superb teacher that we can all learn from, sister. All praises to Allah. No. But if you want to say something, just ask me. Just ask me if you want me to interject, though. All praises to Allah.
I want you to interject on something. I want you to tell me. What is your favorite song by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles?
Let me see. I don't like Tears of a Clown too much. I don't like. You know what? The one that I just heard was very heartfelt, and I was thinking about it when I just heard the song that you was just playing. When he was talking about, you know, my heart went out to play, he was so sincere in his asking for forgiveness for the problems that he made, that he created in a relationship. And it was almost like he was praying to Allah, praying to God. It was a spiritual essence in what he was doing that doesn't exist in music anymore. Now, today, in the music that you hear now, you hear a lot of these brothers talking about, yeah, I am a player. See, he said his heart went out to play. He's remorseful for being a player. Today, they going for, I'm a player to the heart, I'm a deal. You know what I mean? They just talking about how many women they can get. You know, it's a conquest. It's romantic music. You know what I'm saying? Rome being the core of that word. And Rome, the Roman antics, romantic music, meaning a conquestrial music, a music that is made in conquest and in building an empire of antics and lustful thought is what we're doing today. But that music he made, that was real love music. It was dutiful music. Because love is duty. Love implies duty. And he was being as dutiful as he could to ask for remorse from the God within that woman. And when you heard that kind of music, the God within that woman would easily respond and forgive him because he was coming with a sincere prayer to her heart, you know what I'm saying, to try to re-strengthen and build that commitment in a relationship. And that's what's beautiful about the song to me.
Okay, all right. And Brother Rasul?
Somebody being quiet.
Brother,
can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you now.
Okay. What I think the difference is between
know, today's music and the music of, you know, the time of Motown and the music that was coming out back then, I think there's a lot of substance missing. I can't hear anything today that really feeds the mind, that really feeds the soul. You know, all we're dealing with today is, you know, songs that are being manufactured, like, you know, people putting CDs together in like 3 days, you know, instead of really putting a craft, you know, and a passion into the music and sending out, you know, messages, you know, versus, you know, what's going out in the world, or, you know, the sex element being the main product of their material. Back then, you know, these brothers, they taught you what it was like to court, to, you know, to have an attraction, or, you know, what was true love. You know, it was never, you know, this element of, you know, I'm looking at how good you look or how you dress or the status that you hold, because back then, people were pretty much almost on the same level of status. You know, so then there were other things that you could actually look deeper into other than, you know, what was material. You know, so what I see, you know, the difference between then and now is the substance. Substance is just not there.
Well, you know, my brother, I said, may I add something, Sister Gidget? I was moved to say this while you were talking, brother. I feel your spirit, and I believe I agree with you in the very great most part of what you said. But there's an interesting member of our nation who is an Emmy-winning or Grammy-winning record producer and a songwriter. I don't think a lot of people know her because she functions behind the scenes. And she has worked with every million-selling artist, all the way from Bad Boy Records and Puffy Combs and all the people who are putting out records today. And she has a very interesting take. Her name is Sister Mary Brown. And Mary Brown is one of our sisters in the Nation of Islam. Well, you see her on everybody. Anybody know who I'm talking about?
Yes, sir.
But Sister Mary Brown is written for everybody from Danity Kane to Puffy. She was on the TV show Making the Band. And so people see her intermittently in the music. And you see her on the red carpet at the Grammys and stuff every year. But Sister Mary Brown is a very interesting soul because she is a soulful musician. And she has to fight to get her music recorded as she hears it. And she has to fight to get gimmicks taken off of it and substance put into it. In fact, the rapper... Who's the rapper that made the song "Don't Hate on Us" with Fabulous? Who is that?
That was Jaheim.
I know. I can't think of his name.
Yeah. R&B Jaheim.
Artist.
Jaheim. It was Jaheim. That's a Mary Brown song. That's
Who
a song
Mary
written by our sister in the Nation. Hmm.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and so Sister Mary Brown. I don't know, Sister Gidget, if you can get in touch with her about being on a subsequent show, but she's a very wise and beautiful spirit of a sister. And she would help you understand, help us understand what's happening in music today. But tonight, we are tributing Motown Records, talking about what it meant to Black America, what it means to us today in memory, in recollection, and in our current musical taste. Because I dig Motown today. I mean, I don't have to go flashing that. I can put on my iPod right now and get in the groove. So, I mean, I think Motown is a very significant group.
Right.
And I really, really
That's
think
right.
the show's next.
Yes, sir. Okay, we have a question from the audience. We're gonna open up the line. Hold on a second, Brother Daniel. Hold on.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, area code 314-359. Your mic is live.
Four in the building.
Who? Are you there? Area code 314.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Greetings, everyone. I've been listening to the show since you came on, all the distinguished panelists. And the music
Greetings.
You've been playing, sis.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to ask the question. When I think of Motown, because I'm a product of the music of Motown, but when I think of Motown, you know, I look at it as a vehicle of expression for Black America. And I say that because at that time of its prominence and the height of Motown, it made it okay for you to feel whatever you were feeling at that time. Now, the only thing you can feel is an intense lust, or an anger. You can't really feel love. You can't feel admiration. You can't feel adoration. You can't feel for the people, any of that. The only thing you're really allowed to feel that's acceptable in Black America specifically is an anger or an intense love. Come on, let's go to bed, or I'm going to shoot you. That's pretty much what you get. What I'd
right.
like to know is, what do the panelists think the step would be for writers, singer-songwriters? Somebody mentioned Mary Brown, beautiful sister, a friend of mine, and all of that. What do we think would be the, how do you repair what has been damaged? How do you go back on the timeline and say, okay, well, this is where we went off, but Motown set the precedent, so now we can recreate an atmosphere, like Student Minister Jamil said, where you got love and you have all of that. How do we recreate that type of atmosphere in today's music?
All right. Anybody, Brother Jamil, you want to take that question?
First off, I want to thank my sister for the beautiful eloquence of her words, the statement that she used as a preface, and then her very, very scientifically worded question. Sister, what is your name?
My name is Sister Katina Muhammad.
Sister Katina, you need your own radio show. You deep, girl. Keep it up. Keep it up.
That's right.
Let me just say what I am moved to say, and I don't want to take time from the other panelists, but I will briefly say that power, according to Frederick Douglass, concedes nothing without its man. Where there is no struggle, there is no progress. Black people's need for a change will produce it. If you're dissatisfied, you produce a change. So teaches the Honorable Mr. Elijah Muhammad.
That's
Black
right.
people have become like swine. This is not pleasant to hear. This is not something we like. But the
That's
black
right.
man of today is different from the black man of one generation ago, certainly two generations ago. I was talking with my dear friend today, Sister Butterfly, and we were talking about Otis Redding. And she was talking about how she remembered as a young girl seeing Otis Redding's body pulled from the lake there where his plane had crashed, ending his life at the very tragic and young age of 26 years old. By the time Otis Redding was 26, he had been married for 8 years. He had 3 children. He was paying the mortgage on his house and on his farm. He was a part owner of his record label. He was an internationally known recording artist, and he had traveled literally around the world from Montreux to Montreal to Memphis and all the way back to Monterey. He had been around this planet doing what he did and what he was talented in. And when you listen to Otis Redding's records today, you don't think of a man only 26 years of age singing with that degree of emotional fervor and that degree of experience in life. No 26-year-old man or 24-year-old man could come to a microphone and holler, "Whoa, she may be weary."
You're right. Come on, Brother Jamil.
Young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress. That's for grown folks, you see?
That's
so
right.
What you have to do is create the conditions that are dissatisfying to America. But as Minister Farrakhan told black people in America from KISS 98.7 radio on January the 2nd, 2011, in a broadcast on that Sunday morning, when people asked him, "How can we reclaim the streets and make it decent again?" the minister said, "There's precious little time. We'll work up until the end, but it's nearly midnight." And black people, sadly, have chosen folly over freedom.
That's right.
Black people have chosen death and destruction, chaos and confusion, murder and mayhem. We have chosen to turn our backs on some of the greatest teachers that the world has ever known. We turned our back on Noble Drew Ali, turned
right.
our back on Master Farad Muhammad,
That's
his
right.
messenger Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, Louis Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, C.L. Franklin. We turned our backs on everyone. Bishop G.E. Patterson. We didn't want to hear no truth. We didn't want to hear no teaching. Shut up, preachers. Shut up, teachers. We want to be niggers. And so Allah is preparing for us a feast that we have ordered. The only way out. I don't want to take this show in a southerly direction, but I will say the only way out is to hear and accept Islam and to contextualize our cultural experiences in that framework so we can begin to understand. Sister Katina, we can change things, but it takes people like you and it takes people like our esteemed panelists who are experts like Brother and Brother Kareem and Brother Rasul and Brother James and Sister Gidget. Certainly, it takes experts like them to through this process and to create new and different things. I want to consume them, and when you create them, I'll be buying your record.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
To elaborate on what our great student minister is saying, I mean, always learn a lot from that brother, you know what I'm saying? So, but to elaborate on what he's saying, you know, we've, myself and Brother Jihad Hassan Muhammad in Dallas and other brothers, Rafiq Muhammad in St. Louis, you know, we saw this problem that was happening in music. We saw the tumultuous culture that had developed. And we said the only way to reverse the effects of the culture was to actually address the culture directly. And when we came up with the Dynasty Hip Hop Mentoring Program, we realized that there was a gap that was between the culture of Motown and the culture of whatever they want to call this today, hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? Because hip-hop is really not hip-hop. It's rap music because hip-hop means to take what you know. Hip means to know. Hop means to move. Take what you know, comprise it into a movement for freedom, justice, and equality. That's real hip-hop. But the thing about it is, when we saw that there was a gap there, we knew that we had to intercede in this problem. We put a studio in the mosque at Muhammad's Mosque number 28. There's a studio there. We invited children to come into the studio and record their vocals, regardless of what it was, because when you ask a child what is wrong with you, they do not know what's wrong with them. But when you ask them to make a song, they will tell you everything that's in their heart that's wrong with them. They tell you how much they hate bees, how much they hate their daddy, how much they want to kill this dude, how much they want to murder this, how much they want to murder that. And then us listening to that, that was us receiving the culture. It was us receiving something that we could analyze and observe in their mind. And once we were able to analyze the problem that was going on with these children in the songs that they were making, we were able to tailor make a program or a mentoring component that was custom made for their problem. And we started seeing that they were coming out of the problems because we became fan of their debaucherous work and gave them ideas and implementations to kind of kill the negative idea and make new ideas. And we could tell that they were healing because months later, the songs began to change. The ideas began to change. Righteousness began to permeate. And that's what we've been doing by mentoring them and meeting them on the level that they are and listening to the songs and not being offended by it, but listening to the negative ideas and say, okay, why do you think like that? Why do you feel like that? It's almost like a musical straight wire from Dianetics. So that's a program that we have found in Dynasty that has been very effective in helping young people and producing members of the Nation of Islam. Some of the members in the program are now registered members of the Nation of Islam. So that's what we have seen that has worked in the hip-hop genre. And we always introduce them to the fact like Minister Jamil is teaching here and Brother Daniel and Brother Kareem and Brother Rasul is teaching. And we introduce them to the likeness and greats of Motown and the 70s or Earth, Wind & Fire and all the great artists, the Ohio Players, and even some of the works by Marvin Gaye. We introduce them to that and say, what is the difference? What happened between this point and where you are today? What has happened? Why is your music not standing the test of time when this artist is still being played on the radio? Why are they making great music and you're making temporarily music that gives you temporary success? So we found a great success and value in helping them on that level.
Okay, thank you, Brother James. And Brother Kareem, we lost Brother Rasul. Hopefully we'll get him back on the line in a minute. But Brother Kareem, is there anything you want to add to answer this question?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I would. First of all, I want to thank Sister Katina for her question because it's timely, it's right on time, and it's right in line with where my thinking is always at when we're talking, you know, as you know that. And I want to thank Brother Jamil. I want to thank everybody who's contributed. I mean, I've just been sitting back listening because a lot of the history of Motown, first I want to address that, I didn't know these things. I mean, you know, I wasn't familiar with it. And it just shows me I mean, I have a lot of musical history, but I just wasn't aware of that history with Motown. And it shows me the all-encompassing effects of this teaching that we have. I mean, it's just, it's awesome. I mean, in other words, there's nowhere you can turn, and not be confronted with the truth of Elijah Muhammad. I mean, you just can't get away. I mean, you're wasting your time. Now, in response to Sister Katina's question, exactly what Brother James is talking about and what Brother Jameer, I mean, they both hit the points, I would say counterpoints only. The thing is what we have to change is ourselves. We also have to offer something that the people are going to want. I mean, and as Brother Jameer was mentioning, I mean, we have to understand our people have been turned into, they have become, and now they voluntarily accept and seek after filth. So when you got individuals that seek filth, it goes right back into what we got at Savior's Day when the minister reintroduced the economic blueprint, and a lot of people are on the economic blueprint, and they still, all they're seeing is money. But we're forgetting the moral component. How we can get to the people is by literally pooling our resources. And our greatest resource, I've said this many times, is us.
Right.
So if we are an example, first and foremost, of someone who is striving to submit their will to do the will of Allah, first and foremost, then that's going to come through in our talents. That's going to come through in, I mean, if we can sing, if we write or whatever it is, it'll come through. And then, just as Brother James is talking about, you got to reach the people. I mean, in our teachings, it tells us no man can successfully, or no one can successfully teach anyone, I'm paraphrasing, who does not correctly or properly speak that people's language. So that means we got to come at them where they're at and then lift them up out of the dirt. But one thing I have noticed, and, you know, from being around Dynasty and being around those youth, I've been around them that long, but I've seen some of them go from zero to 100 miles an hour just like that because somebody, instead of criticizing them, listened to what they had to say and did a critical analysis of it and then fed back to them what they needed so that they could go on and grow. I mean, forums like this, we have to have these. Also, and I'm going to close on this note, the other thing I think that we really need to do, those of us who are musical, we need to actually start producing. I mean, because to me, that's part of the ministry. You know,
right.
The music, when a person won't listen to you teach, won't listen to you preach, you give them a good beat, you give them something to dance to, and then you hit them with those lyrics, because the majority of the time, they're not even listening to the lyrics. They're getting programmed with it, but they don't really understand what's going on. But we need to begin to produce. We're producing a new world, right? We're building a new world. Well, a new world got to have music instead of this, you make me sick. You know, and so that's how we get to them. First and foremost, by living these teachings, not talking them, living them, and then incorporating that into every aspect of what we do. Yeah, and that's how I see that. That's my take on it.
Excellent points.
That's right.
You know, brothers, I'm just thinking. This is Brother Jameel, by the way.
Yes, sir.
And I'm thinking about what you do there at Mosque Number 28, and I want to salute you and Minister Donald and Student Minister Donald and all of his staff and laborers and all the believers there. It is essential that you and I support each other in these mosques.
Right.
Every mosque in the Nation of Islam brings a little something different by way of a specialty. And a St. Louis mosque, you don't hear a lot about that name. Like when you go to Savior's Day and you get a drill competition, you heard St. Louis this year in the Vanguard category. But you always hear Atlanta, Chicago, New York, L.A., maybe Detroit, maybe Philly, but you don't hear a lot about the other cities which give
right.
the nation its character and put that oomph in it. St. Louis, a city named after Minister Farrakhan,
yes, sir.
Is a, is a city where we have been consistent and striven and moved hard from State Street to the Sears Building, now West Florissant, and we keep on building and we keep on moving. And I salute Brother Donald and I salute the believers there. If you all remember to give him my love and greeting, please do, because he's one of Minister Farrakhan's most steady hands at the wheel, delivering a consistent product, delivering a consistent message in his city, active and involved and well-known, and I really support what you're doing there with the youth in the city. It's exciting. Heck, I want to be in the studio and lay down me some tracks, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. You're more than welcome, bro.
Okay, listen, okay, we almost at the half-hour mark, and I want to, in light of the sister's question, I'm going to send this song out, and this is how I feel about the music of Motown, and especially the era in the 60s and the 70s. So this is going out to yesterday's music, and again, I don't have to introduce these artists. That was the mighty, mighty Jackson 5. And, wow, hearing Michael again at that age, it just does something to me. He was just such a treasure. It's such a tragedy that he's gone too soon. But, of course, that was the mighty Jackson 5 saying, I want you back. And that's how I feel about our music today that we once had back in the day. I want it back. So, come on, somebody talk to me about the Jackson 5. Anything, everything, what y'all got?
Wow, now the Jackson 5, that's from my time right there, really. Yeah, that's Brother Kareem.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I remember listening to Michael, like you say, at that age, and I mean, we more so contemporaries, you know, but listening to that brother and then watching them perform on stage, I mean, just the symmetry of them. and how they moved, I mean, as a family. I mean, later on, I got to find out about, you know, their connections to Islam. But the thing was, is that, again, as Brother James was mentioning earlier, Brother Jameer, in the music, even in the dance songs and in the playful songs, you still were getting wisdom. You were still getting, there was still something that really, you took about soul music, touched your soul, and would help to keep you on track. Just like that song you just played, "I Want You Back." Again, he's a young boy. However, he's saying to this girl, I mean, hey, you touched me, and hey, I done messed up, but you know what? I want you back. I mean, will you take me back? Can I come home? You know, we don't find that today. You know, in the so-called music, and like I say, make you sick is what I call it today. You know, in that stuff, they're promoting this, I don't need you, it's always another one. I mean, look at it. I'm a player. A player of what? You know, so, I mean, like I said, I love the Jackson 5. I mean, of course, not when they became the Jacksons, I wasn't too fond of, but the Jackson 5, I love it.
Okay, yeah, let me do a check right quick, y'all. Hold on. Is Brother Jameel, we lost him. Brother Jameel, are you there?
I'm right here. I'm like Michael Jackson.
Okay.
We must bring salvation back.
Well, you know what? I want to say this about the Jackson 5, because the Jackson 5, we saw their story. I don't know how much of it is truth, how much of it is fiction, but whatever degree of it is true or fiction, that was a phenomenal rise to stardom in this industry. And Michael Jackson, I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, that being in that little person and what he eventually evolved into. And some things are just so natural, just like with him and Prince and Stevie Wonder and so many others. He was just a phenomenal performer, you know, singer, dancer, writer, actor, whatever. He covered all of it. And, you know, I just want to personally honor Michael Jackson tonight. I love you, rest in peace. And I'm forever a fan of Michael Jackson. All right. Now, I want to send something out to my sisters. Just a reminder, and I want to talk about these girl groups, because I love Beyonce. She represents Houston very well in her rise to fame and stardom and stuff like that. But, you know, I was talking to a brother today, and he was talking about how the girls used to get up and they get dressed and they put on their pearls and, you know, they were dignified and classy. And, you
right.
know, every woman I see on stage today is half naked. And, you know, even Beyonce, she started out with that same kind of class. Destiny's Child started out with that same kind of class, and then something went wrong. She, all of a sudden, every time I see it, she got on a bodysuit or something. But I'm going to send this out to my sisters, for those who are waiting and, you know, for courtship and marriage. This one is just for you.
Come on.
I need love to ease
yeah.
my mind. I need to find someone to call mine. But mama said, hey, hurry up. No, it's just not the way. She said, love don't come easy. It's a game of give and take. Can't hurry love. No, you just have to wait. You gotta trust, give it time. No matter.
Yes, ma'am.
Somebody talk black to me about the Supremes.
I mean, see, that song right there about the Supremes, once again, I mean, it's a higher, much higher message that's in that song. I mean, it's just like saying you can't hurry God, you can't hurry love, you can't hurry the duty that our Father has to us. She said, upon that song, you know, how long must I wait for a soft voice to hear at night? I mean, we know that the night is the dark hour in which we live in. You know, like
there comes
a time where no man will be able to work. It's a dark night, but she's looking for the soft voice. She's looking for the tender voice. She's looking for the voice of the messenger. She's looking for the voice of a warner and a worker in our midst, the Honorable Men's Louis Farrakhan. She is looking for that true love. How long must I wait? That is the cry of our people. That is supreme wisdom that is in that. They were teaching
That's
it
right.
the whole time. She said, their mother said, you can't hurry this. This is something you want to wait for, but it's a game of give and take. You got to give some charity.
Now,
you got to give something back to the people. You know what I'm saying? You can't expect something if you ain't giving nothing
that's
to
right.
work in your people. So the thing about it, when you listen to the Supremes, you're listening to a wisdom that of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You're listening to people that know what true love is, because she's not saying, look, I want a girl to love me. I want a girl to put it on me. I want a girl on me to give me this. You're just taking, taking, taking. But she's saying it's a game where I have to give something. I have a duty to what I love. So if
Why
I
now?
Have a duty to what I love, then I will get love back. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about that song. But at the same time, in that process of us waiting for heaven to be established here, we have to be patient and understand that we can't hurry love. We just have to wait. You know what I'm saying? But it's a game of give and take, meaning that we play a role in manifesting it in the long run.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Brother Jamil, drop us some history about who was once known as the Primettes that turned into being the Supremes.
Well, Sister Gidget, I feel, Brother Jane, that's why they call you too hard, brother. That's why they call you. That's why they call you.
Hard rock. Hard rock. Hard rock.
Rock.
Hard rock.
Let me just say this to you, family. This is an example of the cultural understanding and the kind of dialogue. I agree with Brother Kareem what he said earlier. This has to take place more often. The Primettes were like the girl equivalent or the girl group that was accompanied in the mind of Berry Gordy to accompany the Primes, which was the name given to the Temptations before they became the Temptations.
Good.
It was...
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was Florence Ballard and Mary Wilson, who is the third finest woman on the universe, after Gladys in second place, Sister LaToya in first place. and Diane Ross, who is today known as Diana Ross. Now, they came out to Brewster Projects in Detroit, and they began trying to make hit records and sing, and they couldn't really catch at first. But then when the Supremes came up, as I started mentioned earlier, they started making hits, one after another after another. And what Brother James is talking about now with the fervent fire of faith in his voice is that even if the writers did not consciously intend to make a song about calling on God in the night of understanding for the soft voice guidance to lead us to freedom, justice, and equality, maybe they were just talking about a soft voice to talk to them at night in the so-called loving or romantic, and I'm sorry about using that word again, brother, but let me just use it for lack of a better term at this time, in that sense. That still is a higher message than what we get in much of the music today, because the idea of waiting, you know, I can think of Janet Jackson singing, just wait a while, you know, and the waiting and saying, wait a minute now, we got to slow down and you got to be patient because it's about that kind of thing. There were principles in these songs, and you asked me earlier about my favorite Supremes song. I don't know if Sister Gidget can get to it, but you keep me hanging on. And then when you hear itching in my heart, she's trying to deal with the fact she doesn't know what's going on. She says, the love bug done bit me. I didn't mean for him to get me. But I get up in the morning, and I'm filled with desire. Ooh, I can't stop the feeling. I can't stop the fire. Right? She's talking about something.
Right.
Who was like an itching in my heart, tearing it all apart. It's an itching in my heart, and baby, I can't stop it. Scratch it. Right? What you see now is that kind of a backbeat. I think it was you, Brother James, who said, whatever we make in the positive music, in answer to Sister Katina's question, it has to be something that the people want. Even when we give them something positive, we got to give them a groove.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Artists think that they got their positive message should be enough to carry them, get all mad when people don't want their record because the beat is whack, the production sucks, and the record is really bad. Even though the message is good spiritually or
intellectually.
That's right. The good groove up under what it is that you got to say. In 1979, when McFadden and Whitehead came out with Ain't No Stopping Us Now, We Leaving the Negative People Way Behind, when they came out with that, that beat up under Ain't No Stopping Us Now had everybody stopping. I was in the Bronx, New York, and I watched a whole block full of Puerto Ricans pull out ghetto blasters, set them down, put them on WBLS, and when that song came on, everybody stopped traffic in the middle of the street doing the hustle.
Wow.
I said, Lord have mercy, they got something going on here. Music has power. Let me conclude by the Supremes by saying this, Sister Gidget. These girls could sing. Diane was a personality, a driven, aggressive, ambitious woman. And Florence was a tortured soul who could sing her head off. A little goofy, tall, and ungainly, but all of them was pretty in their own way. Now, Mary
was the glamorous one.
Yeah, she was the glamorous one, the third finest woman in the universe after Gladys Knight and Sister LaToya. But I want to say they all contributed something to the group. And as they contributed to the group, they made that group essential. Now, if you can think back to the Supremes, they didn't have no mini dresses on.
No, sir.
They wasn't wearing nothing to put their body parts in full display. They wasn't doing no dance moves. They had them shaking their behind in the face of the camera. They didn't do nothing
right.
Like that. They might put a glove on the camera, stop in the name of love. Or they might sing, baby, baby, where did our love go? Oh, don't you want me?
Right.
You don't want me no more. They sang plaintive love songs about longing for the relationship with their boyfriend. It was, again, it was Berry Gordy on that youth movement. It wasn't complicated. It wasn't trying to be, you know, Vivaldi and Tchaikovsky. It wasn't trying to be Verdi's operas. It wasn't none of that. It's just baby, baby. Oh, baby, baby. Baby, baby. And so that made successful commercial records.
Yes, sir.
It's a great group.
Yes, sir.
And it started changing their cast as Diana Ross left. And then you add Cindy Birdsong after Flo leaves. And then you add Jean Terrell after Diana leaves. And then
that's
you
right.
add Say Green. And you add Sherry Payne. You add
that's right.
came in. And so they ended with a different lineup than they had at the beginning. But the Supremes were always divinely. I'm not talking about what I know. I don't know that. But I know that for me, they helped me to see what I like.
Sure.
A woman just looking at a black woman. I liked a classy woman that was coiffed
right.
and dressed to the nines and had her peau de soie shoes on with them pointy toe pumps and them proper 2.5-inch heels and had the little satin bag to match. Watch out, honey. Watch out. Okay?
Right.
Okay.
You know what? It just is one more thing I want to say to Brother Jamil that he may not know or he may not remember. And why I definitely got to give a lot of praise to the divinity. I mean that is in that music that has inspired him, because it was one time when Brother Jamil came to St. Louis. We was at 1408 North Kings Highway, and I had a CD. At that time I was a lot younger and I was into rapping myself, and I had a CD. And Brother Jamil was in town. I'm like, man, Brother Jamil got to hit his CD. So I let Brother Jamil hit it. Got in the car, turned it up. He was like, all right, you all right? And then when the CD got finished playing, he said, Brother James, he said, that's good. He said, that's good, but who outside the Nation of Islam going to listen to this? I mean, he was real. He was real with that. And I'm going to tell you right yeah, now, that's what I said. Those words inspired everything that Dynasty has been doing. Because when he said that, it was a great epiphany. He said, yeah, that's good. Yeah, all right. Yeah, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But who outside the Nation of Islam is going to listen to it? And he said, you got to expand what you're doing to reach the people. And from that day forth,
I told Jihad what he said, our brother that's working in Dynasty in Dallas. From that day forth, it changed our whole perception of who we were trying to reach and what we were doing it for. So, brother, I don't know if you remember that day, but I wanted to thank you for that, bro, because you're responsible for a lot of what I'm doing today just with that statement.
All praise to
Allah.
Number light, come.
Always been power. Go ahead, brother Dan.
Yes, sir. I want to say three things, you know, dealing with the Supremes. When they did that number one hit, Where Did Our Love Go, Holland Doge and Holland had it locked for the Marvelettes, and they turned it down because that wasn't their forte, because they felt it was infantile. So with the Supremes, with the add to that about Florence, Florence was on the fringe of being with the Marvelettes. And third, going, you know, prior to, you know, when they made the change in the lineup in 67, Cindy Birdsong said this out of her own mouth. She said she didn't know which member was going to leave the Supremes.
Yes, sir. Okay, listen, we wind it down. So this song right here in particularly is for the MGT and the FOI. And if you want to know what it takes to make it, here you go.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, hey.
Took one look at you, and it was plain to me you were my destiny.
Your arms open wide, I threw away my pride. I'll sacrifice for you, dedicate my life to you. I'll go where you meet.
Come on, baby.
Always there.
Yes.
I was frozen.
in time. So come on, Brother Kareem, blow us one.
All right. Well, the song that I've chosen, because I was going to do Just My Imagination, so that's not the question. I ain't doing that now. So, but the other song that I had in mind, I hope references where we are in our struggle right now today. With the music and with everything. And it's from Marvin Gaye. It's from the album What's Going On. It goes a little something like this. It goes a little something like this. Hey, baby, what you know good? I'm just getting back, but you knew I would. War is hell. When will it end? When will people start getting together again? Are things really getting better, like the newspaper said? What else is new, my friend, besides what I've read? Can't find no work, can't find no job, my friend. Money is tighter than it's ever been. Say, man, I just don't understand what's going on across this land. Oh, what's happening, brother? Yeah, what's happening? What's happening, my man? And I'm going to leave that where it is.
Thank you, Brother Kareem. And this one is not going to get away under no circumstances.
Truth.